Hi, I'm Matt Nunn. In this session today, we're going to talk about the modern application lifecycle and how the Visual Studio 2012 tools for application lifecycle management can help you overcome the issues that you have in building and developing modern applications. So, as we think about the lifecycle of software development today, there is a lot of complexity involved in what we need to do. And if we look at this graphic, you can see that, you know, there are a number of phases in the modern application lifecycle. We have the definition phase, where we call ideation. We have the development phase, the traditional building the software. We have the operational phase that often people don't think about, where we put that software into production and people actually have to use it. And then we need to have the measure phase, where we look at the software that we've built, we look at how it's been performing, and decide what we need to do to change it. And this really falls back into the whole paradigm of the modern application, which is continuously evolving. We need to be able to continuously evolve our software on shorter and shorter turn cycles as we move forward. So what we have here, obviously, is things like the product backlog leading into an implementation phase, into an operational backlog, and then through a measurement phase. And the real key behind the modern application lifecycle is to eliminate waste from those cycles, reduce the time that you spend on any one of those cycles, and then provide deeper integration and broader visibility about everything that's going on. And we also want to think about continuously building things into this lifecycle. So continuous feedback, where I can continuously get information back about what I'm building. Continuous quality, thinking about quality of that application at every step along the way. And then continuous delivery, where I want to be able to ship my application or new versions of my application on a very short lifecycle. There are impediments to this delivery. And here on this chart, we can actually have a look at some of the impediments at each of the phases. So as we go in the define phase, the ideation area, it's very easy to have problems here with things like misunderstood requirements. You know, what the business user or the person who owns the product was thinking about maybe doesn't get translated into what's given to the software developer to build. Also, we have to deal with conflicting priorities. People want to do different things. People want to add different features. We need to really clearly understand exactly what the priorities of this particular iteration of the application are. So we step into the development phase, taking that idea and turning it into working software, we come up against other problems. Quality is often an afterthought. People are so excited and eager to build code and get something working, they don't necessarily consider the quality aspects of what they're building until very late in the day. We want to make sure we think about that earlier. How do I manage all of the dev and test environments? In the modern app world, there's so many different moving parts to it, and there's so many different platforms that you're targeting. How do you make sure that I have all the environments I need to ensure that what I'm building will work? How do I deal with a cross-platform team? Not everything we build is .NET. How do I deal with people who are using Eclipse to build Java portions of the application, or maybe building for other mobile device platforms? And then as we get out of the end, something related to requirements is unmet user expectations. If we didn't get the requirements right in the first place, maybe we don't meet the expectations of the users. Maybe we don't deliver what it is they need. And then maybe operations isn't even ready for us. Maybe if we haven't talked to them, they don't know what they need to have in place for us to actually be able to deliver and get this software operating. And then once you have some working software, there are problems even getting it into operations and then getting information back from your operational team. Often, there are isolated tools and different workflows than what you do when you're engineering the software. How do I take problems that happen in production and actually get them resolved by my engineering team? How do I get good, actionable information back to my development team on what needs to be fixed? And then from a user's point of view, how do they give me good feedback as we try and measure what we've built so that they can tell me what it is that needs to be in the next version? What I'm going to show you in the demo now is just a few of the steps along the way using Visual Studio 2012 and our application lifecycle management tools that will actually help you solve a number of these impediments. So let me switch over to my machine over here. And where we're going to start is we're going to start in Team Foundation Server. Team Foundation Server is at the heart of everything we do in our application lifecycle management suite of tools. And what you see here is the new web interface and our dashboard. And you can see immediately that there's lots of information here that allows you to understand what's going on in this particular project. And we've landed in the middle of a project run. You can see that I've got 20 items in my sprint backlog, have a couple of pieces of feedback that have come in, I've got a code review that needs to be looked at, and it looks like we've got about 3 bugs. All very clear right on that home page. This allows you to have this deep visibility into exactly what's going on. I can even see here in this tile, how many builds have completed and how well they're doing. So the first place we would go when we're looking at this is to think about, you know, well, what's in the backlog? We talk about a backlog. What we're talking about is a set of ideas. These are wishes that people had for the piece of software that we're building. And while they sit out here, this is all they are, is they're just wishes. And you can see that these items in the backlog here are just set to be in release one, but they're not actually allocated to anybody at the moment. You can see that we're currently in sprint six and we've already done some sprints leading up to it. So we probably have a decent piece of software now. So maybe I come up with a new idea, something else I want to add to it. Maybe I want the service rep to be able to find directions. So that's a wish that I have that I'm going to add to the product backlog. Notice that's put in, it's actually put in at the top of the list for me. And maybe I'm going to put a little bit more information in this. So I can actually open the item up. I can say that I think it should take you 10 whatevers for effort. I could tell you that it had a certain amount of business value. I could actually write a description in here, you know, as a service rep, I want to be able to find directions to my next location for some reason so that I can be on time. Very simple, added a lot of information into there. I can just save and close that out. It'll become part of the backlog. One of the other things you do on the backlog is you prioritize. You decide what's important and what's not important. Here, I can see that I have, you know, 8 items on the backlog here. I've just added this service rep one, but maybe that's not the most important thing. So I can actually just click and drag it, move it down lower on the backlog. And then as I think about these backlog items, I'm going to pick certain things that I want to actually work on now. So I'm in sprint 6. Maybe I've actually decided that this is the one that I want to work on. I can quickly click and drag it into sprint 6, or the iteration that's currently working. I notice that it's been added to sprint 6. If I go across here, I can now look at the sprint, and I can actually see service rep to be able to find directions. But what does that really mean? Well, I'm going to say that yes, that's fine. I will actually approve that. Save it, and I'm actually going to commit this into the sprint. So we will actually work on this in this sprint. So I've committed that. But now I need to understand what is it I need to do to complete that wish. So I'm going to add a set of tasks to it. So let me open up the tasks here, and I have to give it a title. So it's like link to Bing Maps. So that's something that someone's going to have to do. I'm going to give it to Annie to work on. I'm going to tell her it's 4 hours worth of work, and it's a development type of activity. Maybe I want to add another task. So what I can do is I can add another task. I'll assign this, I'll make this one develop mobile UI. And I'm going to give this one to someone else. Let's give it to Cameron. And I'm going to tell you that this is going to be 10 hours. Or 10 pieces of work. So I've now added some tasks, and I could carry on doing that so that people would have things to work on. So a backlog item, or a product backlog item, is a wish. The tasks are the things that people actually need to go and do. Notice that as I added tasks here, you can see information coming up on the right-hand side of the screen, how much work the team's doing, how much is unassigned, how much is development work, who's actually going to be working on these things. I can also go over here and manage the capacity of my team, because not everybody can do everything. So I'll give Annie's going to have capacity of 4, Cameron can have a capacity of 3. You know, these are the traditional amounts of time that you actually have to spend working on stuff at any one particular point in time. And actually, let me give this a development capacity for all people on this team. So now I can actually start really agilely managing what my team is able to do and what they can actually deliver. Now, when they actually want to go and work on stuff, we'll move them over to the task board. And here you can see that I have the list of all the tasks that I put in here. And now as a team, I can actually work on this together. So at the moment, you're seeing it by backlog item. I only have one. I could also switch over and look at it by team member, where I now have 2. And it's really simple for a team member to be able to work on this item. They can just pick it up and drag it to in progress. That says they're working on it. They can click on the amount of time left and, you know, say it's reduced to 2. I could switch on this and I could give it over to Cameron and it would switch over to Cameron. You know, I could even take this and I could give it to someone who's not even on this task board and have it put to that person. So lots of power for controlling what we're actually building inside our applications and how we're actually going to manage the development of this. We'll go back to the backlog now. So I'm out there and I've planned the work that I'm going to do. I've assigned a set of tasks. I've built a set of backlog items. Now we're actually going to go off and we're going to build some code. So we've introduced a number of features into Visual Studio 2012. And one of the things we're going to do is one of the tasks we had here was to build out a mobile UI for this application. So what I can do is with Visual Studio 2012, we're actually given a new PowerPoint storyboarding tool that allows us to really easily build out a mobile UI and get it in front of people who care about seeing it. So what we have here is I've just started PowerPoint with the new storyboarding ribbon at the top. And on the right-hand side, we have the new storyboarding shapes library. And I can scroll down here and I can say, hey, yeah, I want to build an application that's a Windows phone. So there's my Windows phone. And then I can scroll down and I can say, you know, well, let me look at Windows phone icons. So these are icons I can use for a Windows phone, or I can use objects for a Windows phone. So maybe it's going to have, you know, an address bar in it, which I can just drag on and lay it out. Maybe it's going to have a couple of tiles on it, all laid out, obviously, in a nice UI design. Very quickly lay those on. And I can build up an idea of a graphical representation of what this UI is going to look like. And now I can share this with people just by presenting it. And I could put animations in. But PowerPoint's great because I can literally just click slideshow, and all of a sudden, I'm presenting what you've seen on those slides. I also have the power to do standardized types of format. So I can pick a few items on there. Maybe I want to say that's what the top of my applications always look like. If I right-click on them after collecting them, I can add them to my shapes library. So I'll add them across to my shapes. They appear at the top here, called My Storyboard Shape. Now I can just constantly pull those on and make them part of the application. So that's something I can share around my organization, and everybody can have some standardized controls that they want to use. So once we've designed the application, it's time to go off and start writing some code. And again, Visual Studio 2012 gives you some great tools for writing code. So here you go. We've got the Explorer open here. This is my Solution Explorer. If I move over to my Team Explorer, I can see this new concept called My Work. So My Work is trying to keep developers really focused and in the zone. It allows them to see just the things that they need to care about. At the top, you've got in-progress work items and changes that are happening. It allows them to track everything that they're working on. We've got suspended and shelved work. These are things they were working on and want to come back to, and we'll talk about that in a moment. You can see the work items at the bottom here. You know, review implementation with the privacy team, review new features with the technician early adopters. And then code reviews and requests, things that we actually want someone to go and look at our code and work on it. So notice that if I write in here, I've just got a window open here, I can actually change the text. So I've made a little change to a piece of HTML. The first thing you notice that at the top here, in the in-progress work items and changes, you'll see that I have one edit hanging around in my project at the moment. And I could actually go in here and review those pending changes. But imagine that you're working on this stuff and someone, you know, knocks on your door and comes into your office saying that they have a Pry 1 critical bug that you need to go and work on. You've got to drop everything now and, you know, go and work on that until it's fixed. Well, the big problem with that, of course, is that, you know, it takes you time to get back into where you were. You're going to have to like reset Visual Studio, load up other projects, and not really, you know, and go and work on something completely different that's completely out of your zone. Well, with Visual Studio 2012, we've introduced this new concept of suspending a project. And what I can do here is I can suspend this project literally as it is today. Hit suspend, and it's going to shelve all that stuff for me, including all of my VS settings, so that when I come back, I'll be able to just resume it and then start working on it again. So it'll get me back to the zone. When I finish that Pry 1 bug fix, I can come back. And what you can see here, it's cleaned up my environment. If I just come back here and hit resume, what it's going to do is it's going to unshelve everything and put it just back to the way it was. You can see it's put me right back to where I was working before. Really, really powerful feature. Let's just go down quickly and look at code review. Code review is one of the most interesting things, and it's something that lots of people want to be able to do, but a lot of companies and organizations find it really hard. There's a lot of steps involved in doing a code review. You know, I have to decide where my code is and what set of changes are I want reviewed. I have to submit those into some form of source control. I have to then go and get the people who are going to look at the code to come over. We've made it simple inside Visual Studio 2012. What I can look at here is I can actually request a review right from up here on those changes that I've made. I'm going to pick a particular reviewer. In this case, I'm actually just going to give it to myself because I'm the only one who really knows how good my code is. And I'm going to enter a subject, review my code. I could enter a description, and I can submit that request. That's going to go off there. And here you can see the code review that I'm requesting, review my code, open all this up. And now I can actually start looking at that code that I put in for review. So I can actually go and pull the code that's on the shelf set and allow me to actually look at the piece of code there. I can unshelve those changes, I can make a comment about it, or I can send it back. So maybe what I'm going to do is actually I'll move back here. I can just say it was all good. I'm just going to complete the review. And then that will be sent back to me, everything's all good. And now I have this full loop inside my team for being able to do code reviews. So those are just some of the things in lifecycle management that we've made easier in Visual Studio 2012. Let's have a quick look at testing. So one of the great things is with Visual Studio 2012 is the power that we have to test this working software that you've built. So let me just go over and open Microsoft Test Manager. Now, one of the things we want to make sure is, you know, we've been building quality in all the way through the development cycle. But we want our testers to ensure that that actually happened. We don't really want them finding bugs. We don't really want them spending all their time sitting down running through scripts. What we want them to do is go out and find those edge cases that we might not have seen. And with Visual Studio 2012, we give them the new technology to allow them to do exploratory testing. So what I can do here is I can come into the test manager, go to the test area, and I can say just do exploratory testing. If I click on that, it puts me to a new exploratory testing world. I could choose a particular thing I wanted to test around, or I can just go and literally explore an application. So here I am in my exploratory testing tool, and this is what testers are really, really good at. You know, you can make them sit down and you can read through a script, but what they're really good at is being able to just go out there and break stuff. So what I'm going to do is I'll just minimize Visual Studio. I'm going to start my exploratory testing session, and I'm going to go to our application. So here's our homepage. We're recording. Notice that we're going to record the screen. We could also be recording the audio. There's nothing more valuable than hearing what people have to say when they do an application. So I'm going to scroll around. I can enter into certain areas inside the application. I can do an assignment. Okay, that all seems to work nicely. Let's go back. Let me do a delete. Let's see. Scroll down and there seems to be a problem with delete. There's no customer or created by information in here, which there should be. There would be on the other things. So what I can do now is really quickly, you know, take a screenshot of a particular area, plug it in. It appears directly in my exploratory testing tool. I can open that up in Paint or some other world and go highlight the area that I care about. Save it back. And then I can write in here, from delete screen. Give it some information. So that's great. I've got lots of information there. I found this bug. I can actually now go off and create a bug specifically inside the product for it. So here's my bug. As a good tester, I'm going to give you a nice detailed title. So something like delete screen missing info. Notice how everything else has been dropped directly into it. So I'm going to save that bug off. That's all I've given you. I mean, we're going to pick that up later. But I can save that, and at the same time, I can actually create a manual test that allow me to find that again. One of the big problems with exploratory testing is I find a bug. How do I get back to it to prove that it got fixed? Well, what we have here is a bug that we're creating, which has all of the steps. This is a new test case, all of the steps from that bug and how I got to that bug that I can put into my test loop now so that the next time I find it, I can just come in here and easily be able to recreate exactly what I was doing. So I'll save and close that new test case as well. And notice that what it does is it drops us straight back into the exploratory testing area that we were in, and we can go off and just carry on. Okay, so we said that that's good. We can go back again. Maybe I want to try an escalation. Oh, well, see, there's another bug. So yet again, I'm going to grab a screenshot. Say, you know, I got this error in an application. I think it's fairly obviously where the problem is there. found this error, helpful as always. Do the same thing, I'm gonna go and create a bug. Error at escalation. And again, I'm not gonna do that, but I'm gonna save and create a test. Now here's one of the even more powerful things. What you see here is not only has it created a new test case for me, but it's actually only done the steps that I needed from where I last had been. Now it's completely possible that you can actually move this out and actually expand out the steps that you need here. So you can actually go in here, you can change steps. I could pick certain other steps that I needed. So maybe I felt they needed all of the steps rather than just the few that were there. I could pick all the steps that have happened since I started in this area. And I'll say, error in escalate. Save that and close it. That's been filed as well. And now I can just go and end testing. All that information is going to be sent back for me. There's the last information. There's all the information from that exploratory session. And go back in here, and all of my tests are now back in here as well. So that's exploratory testing. The last thing I want to kind of talk about here is the ability to give feedback. So now I've planned my work, I've developed my software, I've tested my software. Now I have a piece of working software that I want to get feedback from my customers on. Well, that's something else that we've made really easy in Visual Studio 2012 with the new feedback tool. So you notice I can go in here. There's different ways that you can actually get to this. We go back to the homepage of TFS. I actually have a link here to request feedback. What that would do is allow me to send a feedback request to certain stakeholders, anybody who's connected to my TFS server. It would be an email. I can give them information about where to go and tell them what I want them to look for. Now, I'm not going to do that. I'm actually going to step straight in and do some on-demand feedback. So I've seen the application was released, and I just want to go in and start playing with it and giving some feedback. So I'm going to pick the server that I'm going up against. I'm going to Fabricam Fiber, select the particular project that I want to give feedback about. And here's my new feedback tool. So I can launch, this would have information if I was guided for feedback, but I'm actually just going to start giving voluntary feedback. Again, notice here, we can record the screen with voice, screen only or voice only. With feedback giving, you learn so much by hearing things that people are saying. If you ever do user testing, they want to hear what you're saying because it's the, oh, I can't find this. It's the comments that they make which are really, really important. I could record it with screen with voice. I'm actually not going to at the moment. I'm just going to go and give feedback specifically. So again, I can go next, and I'm going to start giving you feedback. So I'm going to come in here, and I'm going to say, same sort of thing. I'm going to go, don't like the new logo. So as a user, it's like new logo color. And, I could carry on and I could do other things. Again, in the background, it's going to be recording all this information for me. Maybe I'm a user. Oh, look, I found the error as well. So I can take a screenshot of this. And this looks like an error. When I'm done, I can actually rate the specific item there, and then I can actually rate everything at the end as well. When I submit and close that, what's going to happen, it's going to be sent back into TFS, and that information will appear to all of my users in TFS, and they'll be able to look at the feedback that I've sent it in. Now I have three feedback items, and we'll actually be able to then go and act on that. So that was just a quick look around some of the technologies and the features that Microsoft Visual Studio 2012 has to offer from an application lifecycle management point of view. So let's just take a quick review over what problems we're solving as we talk about lifecycle management today. So in the definition phase that we looked at, where you're deciding what you're going to build and you're trying to pull out the ideas, some of the challenges that you have are your ability to capture clear and actionable requirements. We solve that with storyboarding, allowing you to graphically show your users exactly what it was you're going to build. Long release cycles. We've got sprints and we've got iterations, allowing us to release things far faster, as well as the technology throughout the product to enable us to deliver on these applications. And then software that doesn't meet expectations. Well, because we can go faster, we can get feedback much sooner. And the new feedback tools make it far easier for our customers to actually give us the right information they need to make sure that we build what we care about. In the development phase, there are a number of other different challenges. How do I balance speed with quality? How do I, integrate teams from across the different platforms? How do I make sure that I have all the requirements I need, or if I find one later, I can actually pull it into the application? You know, what about problems when I'm actually delivering the software or making sure that I have the right software that I'm delivering? What you saw in our quick tour, and if you delve in more detail, you'll find even more, was integration across platforms. You know, test-driven development and also exploratory testing, allowing you to understand and see exactly what the issues are. You've got continuous feedback with our feedback tools, as well as continuous testing, allowing you to test every time you make a change and a check-in. And then finally, in the operational phase, we want to build operations-ready software, and we want to make sure that we've integrated the operations team with the development team. And we have great tools and technologies like IntelliTrace and the ability for our operations team to actually integrate through System Center into the TFS product. With all these things together, we can deliver a really powerful application lifecycle management solution in a very modern lifecycle way and integrate across all of the phases and all of the teams that are involved. So go out and try Visual Studio 2012 for yourself and see what a difference it can make to you and your team.